When the Hebrews were freed from slavery to Egypt, you probably know shortly after that that Pharaoh changed his mind. He assembled his soldiers with the intent of trampling the Hebrews under the chariots of the greatest army on earth at that time. The Hebrews had been led by a great pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, right to the edge of the Red Sea where they were hopelessly trapped. I mean, militarily speaking, it was the most horrible situation you can imagine, but that pillar of God's presence, it moved between them and the approaching chariots, and God miraculously gave them a path across the seabed on dry ground before crushing Pharaoh's army with the walls of water collapsing in on them. Now, I want you to remember and keep that scene of God's wrath in your mind and all the plagues of Egypt, because we're going to fast forward a few months. If you can put yourself in their place, right? Put on, Alex, put on your Jewish shoes. You saw the terrible plagues on Egypt, water turned to blood, plagues of frogs and locusts and boils and darkness. It's described as darkness that you could feel. You saw the anger of God looking down on the Egyptian army before crushing them in his wrath. And so now, about 12 weeks later, you're encamped at the base of this mountain called Sinai. And Moses, the mighty deliverer of God's people, has brought you to the very mountain on which God had spoke to him from a burning bush. Exodus 19, verses 10 and 11 says this: "The Lord said unto Moses, Go unto the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. Be ready against the third day, for the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai." Now, given what you've seen, how would you feel about that? You know, God has redeemed you from slavery. He sent Moses to deliver the nation from bondage. But God is also powerful in his wrath, and you've seen that. So I don't know whether you pass those 3 days with fear or with excitement as you wait, or maybe with both. But I can tell you, when you wake up that third day, here was the experience. Exodus 19, verse 16. "It came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of a trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether out of smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly." So there's noise that can only be likened to exceeding loud trumpets, thunder, lightning, the ground shaking under your feet, the mountain trembling, the smoke coming up from the mountain that's on fire like a furnace. Surely you're frightened by what you see, right? Well, yes and no. The end of verse 16 says you're trembling, but the rest of chapter 19 records how God tells Moses to go down the mountain and warn the people not to come up that mountain or they'll die. Moses even says in verse 23 that they can't come up. You've told them not to. But it sure looks like from God's warning that people are still determined to march right up that mountain, even in the face of everything they see. Now, pretty soon that changes. I'm going to skip ahead into the middle of the next chapter for just a moment. In chapter 20, verses 18 and 19, it says, "And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, Speak thou with us," right? You speak with us, "and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die." What's changed? Now, I know verse 18 says the people saw the thunder and lightnings and smoke and all that, and they stood back, but they saw all that in chapter 19 too. What really made the difference here? Why is it, if you're keeping on your Jew shoes here, why is it that you were ready to march up that mountain in chapter 19, but now you're begging Moses, oh, you talk to us. Don't have God talk to us, or he'll kill us. We'll die. Well, in skipping ahead, we must have skipped something pretty important in between, right? Something changed them from that excited enthusiasm to this abject terror. So let me show you what happened in between. Here's a classic summary of Exodus 20, verses 1 through 17. It might seem familiar. You shall have no other gods before God. Shall not make any graven images. You shall not use the name of the Lord in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not kill. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet. Now, even as those words of the Ten Commandments came down, everything that must have been implied by those words struck home with the people, right? You walk through those commandments and you realize one at a time, right? God expects you to place him first in your life. You have to worship him exactly as he demands. You must always speak respectfully and purposefully about him and his work. Your time spent in work and in worship is on his timetable. He demands that you submit to the authority of those he places you under, not to harm others physically and not to harm others emotionally, and to recognize the property rights of others. And don't lie, not even once. Don't covet. And let that one sink in, because that one's inside of you, right? I mean, the 10th commandment is telling us that God is going to judge our heart in all these matters. Not just what we do on the outside, because on the outside, that would be stealing. But how we feel about it on the inside. You want to steal. You can't covet. That sound is the voice of God thundering down through the smoke from the fiery mountaintop. The same God who plagued Egypt and crushed Pharaoh's army in the blink of an eye. These come as commands from the same God who is shaking the ground underneath your feet. His voice from the top of the mountain is saying he's going to judge you too, and here's the standard, and you are doomed. Moses, you talk to God for us. We can't. He'll kill us. Now, if you put yourself in those shoes, then you've got the message. You can't approach God. You need someone else who is going to intercede with God for you. And so what they say is, Moses, you go talk to God. If I go, he's going to kill me. But Moses is not even the mediator you need. In fact, it's a long time later we find out how Moses, right, the mighty deliverer of God's people, how did he react to this? Well, the book of Hebrews in Hebrews 12 describes the scene, the fire and darkness and storms and the sounds, a voice that says that people begged for it not to speak anymore. And here's mighty Moses, Hebrews 12, 21. So terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake. Moses isn't going to go to God for you. Right? The mighty deliverer of the Hebrews is trying to back up and hide behind the same rock you're trying to hide behind. If you can grasp this scene, it's going to go a long way to helping you understand what the law was all about. There's people who come to the law and think, well, here's a list of things that I could do to be righteous. Right? The Pharisees were notorious for believing that. But such a thought was unthinkable to the people camped at the base of Mount Sinai and received the law. They knew better. They knew the law condemned them as unrighteous. Encountering God's standard in the law is far more frightening, much more frightening than we imagine. The God who could speak to Moses on that mountain from a bush that was burning and not be consumed, he does that miracle again, this time with the whole mountain on fire, not being consumed, and a deafening noise and his earth-shaking voice. And you know you cannot be reconciled to that God. You're already a lawbreaker. The law of God isn't given in order to give us a way to be righteous. It was given to show we're not righteous. Right? You're already lacking. You're already condemned. Many centuries later, a Pharisee named Saul of Tarsus would read the law and say, I didn't know I had a problem with coveting until I read, thou shalt not covet. And at that moment, the law came to life and it killed me. Ultimately, though, God didn't give the law in order to create hopelessness in his people. It was to point us toward the true source of hope. We can't look inward at our own behavior in order to find righteousness, but we can always look to the mercy and grace of God. We can look to his promises, that grand plan of salvation in Jesus Christ, who is the only one who can be the mediator, the go-between for us. Remember, this is not where the story started. In the mind of many Jews in Jesus' day, they thought of Mount Sinai as sort of, well, this is the beginning of the nation. But this isn't where the story started. In this grand story of salvation, God has wisely given hope for humanity before handing down this law. You know that Pharisee Saul of Tarsus would put his faith in Jesus and become the Apostle Paul. And he would write about this to the churches at Galatia. We actually looked at a verse from Galatians 3 several devotions before. Now let's back up that and continue on one more verse. What we looked at was Galatians 3:16. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not into seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed, which is Christ. And this I say, that the covenant which was before confirmed before of God in Christ, the law, which was 430 years after, cannot disannul that it should make the promise of none effect. What Paul's saying is that scary scene at Mount Sinai and the giving of the law and the law itself, it's still part of that story about the promise of God to Abraham. In your seed will all the nations of the earth be blessed. Paul says that promise was given 430 years before Mount Sinai. And nothing that happened in the giving of the law, though it shows just how condemned we are by our sins, nothing in that is going to revoke the promise of God. It's in this chapter that Paul reminds us Abraham believed and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And you can believe and have the righteousness of God placed on your account as well. Nothing in the giving of the law has changed the promise of God or his plan of salvation. It simply made it clear that your righteousness is either going to be judged by your behavior according to that impossible law, or your righteousness is going to be judged by your belief in the promise of God that salvation will be brought through Jesus Christ. And so Paul says in Galatians 3:24, wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ that we might be justified by faith. The law teaches us that we need Jesus. It points us to the perfect Son of God who alone fulfilled the law, and he's the mediator that we need. God didn't bring the Hebrews to Mount Sinai because it would be fun to frighten them. Instead, he's done this in order to give this complete clarity to all of them to say, you are not people who are perfect. You are people of the promise. Never forget, you walk by faith in the promise of God. You walk with God by faith alone.